Hello and welcome to the second edition of the MoCo Beat. I'm Dana Tofig.
And I'm Tom Moore.
And we are glad that you've joined us again. We want to thank everyone who listened to our first podcast. And many of you gave us feedback or just shot us an email. And so thank you for that. The feedback, both positive and negative, is welcome and we want to hear it. We have a great, another great show. We're going to have our first guest today. Tom, we're going to have Councilman Mark Brashaley here, right?
Of the Rockville City Council. He's going to talk to us about champion projects that have been added to the Rockville Pike Plan and what's next for that plan.
And we're also going to talk about the MCPS calendar. The Board of Education is beginning the process to plan the 2017-18 school year calendar. And there's been some change that might be coming. And I know already the school year is just ending, but we're already looking forward to a year.
And your host attended the soft opening of the World of Beer in Rockville Town Center. We'll tell you all about that.
So let's get started, and we're going to welcome our first guest.
All right, we're here with Councilmember Mark Brashaley of the Rockville City Council. Mark is in his third term on the council, one term off, and he's back for a four-year term. Mark and I know each other well. We're on Team Rockville together, and we've known each other for a long time and supported each other in all of our campaigns.
So I'm glad that you're here. You and I don't really know each other. We actually just got to talking, I think, just the last couple of weeks. But I'm just glad you're here to ask. And I guess one of the things you're going to do is kind of give us an update on the Rockville Pike Plan. I guess we had talked in our first episode about how there was a big vote coming, and the vote has come. So can you tell us a little bit about what happened?
Yes, Tom and Dana, I'm very happy to be here. And yes, the Rockville Pike Plan, 8 years in the making, most of that time with the Planning Commission. And now it's finally with mayor and council. And now because the state law revision, we actually have the final say on it.
Right. Actually, can you go into a little detail on that? We talked about that a little bit, but what's a master plan? Who's in charge of it? Whose plan is it? Who controls what's in it?
Right. Well, ultimately, the mayor and council control what's in it. It is a neighborhood plan in the overall city master plan. But it's a very important one. We have challenges to the south of the city. We have challenges within the city with what I think is a shortage of housing opportunities. I think neighborhoods are under some pressure internally with what I think are de facto boarding houses now starting to pop up, or houses converting to de facto boarding houses. And I think it really, the whole Pike in Rockville needs to be revised.
So what section of the Pike does the plan cover?
Okay, it covers from the south of the city, just north of White Flint, all the way almost to Veers Mill Road by Richard Montgomery High School.
Okay. So it's funny, a lot of people don't consider that a neighborhood in the city, but it's considered, like, if there's an East Rockville neighborhood plan or a Lincoln Park neighborhood plan, this is just another neighborhood plan in the overall plan.
That's right, and not every neighborhood has a neighborhood plan, but the ones that have been deemed important, either by the locality, the neighbors themselves, or by the city, such as Rockville Pike, they can have neighborhood plans. There's a Twin Brook plan, for example.
Okay. So the Planning Commission has had this for a while. They've been working on it for some time. And now it's before the mayor and council. What has, since the last time Dan and I spoke about it, what has happened at the mayor and council and what remains to happen?
Okay, so mayor and council have made a number of, I think, big decisions this past Monday, including the biggest one, the most controversial, or the one toughest to grapple with, is the issue of access lanes. Should the easements that have been collected by the city since, who knows, 50s or 60s, should they be retained? Should they actually become formal access lanes? So I proposed basically a compromise where we're going to keep the access lane easements for now in the middle and the north pike, but in the south pike, those can be taken back if there's something called a Rockville Champion project coming in.
Right. So first of all, for those who don't know, an access lane, so it's essentially a parallel lane that runs along the pike that provides access to whatever developments or whatever kind of housing's there?
Yeah. So they're parallel to the six lanes of the Pike, one lane of egress or back and forth, and one lane of parking. But it makes for an awfully wide Rockville Pike when you take into account the access lanes. So many people objected on that ground.
And so the Rockville Champion Project, it seems like that's kind of a compromise. Tell us, what would a Rockville Champion Project be like? I mean, if you can give us an idea.
Yeah, what okay. Was, so, like? So the Planning Commission broke this two-mile stretch of Rockville Pike into three areas, South Pike, Middle Pike, and North Pike. And it applies only to South Pike, which is all within a half mile of Twin Brook Metro. It has to be at least 5 contiguous acres, and it has to satisfy certain Rockville City goals, such as more housing or more open space or maybe a community amenity that would not otherwise go in. And if you propose a Rockville Champion Project, you can ask that the access lane easements be forgiven, and that gives you just more horizontal space all the way out to the pike itself.
Okay. So is it, who makes that decision, and is it just meeting one of those criteria, or is it more than one, or what
right.
If when that plan actually comes before the city, what happens?
Right. So what we will end up doing, I believe, is put it formally into the zoning ordinance, the procedure, but have the goals that the Champion Project is satisfying, have those more front in the process, so that a developer can come in and know whether they're qualified for a Champion Project or not before they go through a year and a half or 2 years of the whole 20-step process.
Okay. So is it fair to say that the kind of the idea of a champion plan or a champion project is being introduced into the Rockville Pike Master Plan, but that the details of what that actually means and what will qualify and what won't qualify will get worked out later when the mayor and council takes up the zoning
right.
ordinance?
Right. So three things have been mentioned: housing, open space, and just this whole idea of amenity or transportation, actually. Are there going to be more roads? Are there going to be more bike? For example, bike access across the railroad tracks, all those things could qualify.
When you say housing, what do you mean?
Well, okay, so for example, all this Rockville Pike, most of it is one-story commercial, and there's very little residential in the Rockville Pike area at the moment. So you could go in with our Champion Project and build an apartment building, for example, with ground floor retail, and that would provide housing. That would provide more housing than we have now.
And what is, like, why would somebody want to not have the access road? What is the benefit for the person who's building the project?
Well, it just gives them more horizontal space, right? We can always allow them to go higher if we wished, but it just makes it easier to provide open space, to have more space between their buildings. I mean, that's why there's a minimum acreage. You know, you have to have space enough to satisfy.
Absolutely. And this is just the beginning. It's really, some people think like this is the end of the process. In some ways, this is just the starting gun of a longer process for zoning ordinances and making other changes to the plan. But this is a big step in the process, but just a first step. Right?
Yeah, it's a first step, but it's certainly a milestone.
That's great.
That we finally, by August, will have passed a Rockville Pike plan. And then, yes, there's a zoning component that comes afterwards. I just want to say one more thing about the Champion Project. This is a way for mayor and council to ask the developer, what's in it for Rockville? Mm-hmm. And this is another motivation for it, not just to do away with the access lanes and then the developer within the zoning ordinance has the freedom they want. But this gives us some leverage to say, what's in it for Rockville?
Is it fair to say that different times in history, developers have come before the city with fantastic plans and promised the world and the sky and the heavens and gotten concessions out of the city, and then when it actually comes time, they get the concessions, and when it comes time to build the project, it's not quite what they proposed?
Well, I'm not sure I would go that far. I think we have some very good developments in the city. King Farm, Newmark Commons, even my own neighborhood, College Gardens, they were all along this line of, what does it take to get it built? It's built, then people like living there. But I think now we have so many more pressures than 50 years ago or 40 years ago. We have population pressures. We have the county just surrounds the city. We don't have any more open space or very little open space to develop. We have, I think, internal pressures on the neighborhoods that are not being addressed. It's very expensive to live in this area. People who are teachers, first-time police officers, firemen, they can't really afford to live around here. And I think that's a shame.
So hopefully the change on the Rockville Pike will help ease some of that pressure.
I hope so. And in fact, I'm been trying to turn the argument around. There's been people that have been opposed to residential or a lot of residential in Rockville Pike, and I'm saying, no, this is the way we preserve our neighborhoods. This is the way we take the pressure off the neighborhoods. And we're starting to see people come to mayor and council or to me personally or the other council members who are complaining about, well, this house used to be a single family home and now there's three families there. Or now it's, you know, it's a number of adults, or there are single family streets where you can't park. Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of thing.
So in your estimation, the extra housing that the Champion Projects are going to allow in the South Pike area will actually take pressure off of Rockville's existing neighborhoods?
I think the whole idea is you provide more housing that gives people legitimate choices of where to live. If you have enough housing, the prices start coming down. Right now, a one-bedroom, one-bathroom apartment on Monroe Street is $1,240 a month. And that's a lot of money for a very little space.
Yeah, is it fair to say that the, you know, the last single family house might have been built in Rockville?
Oh, probably not. But I think you're just, you know, a lot here, a lot there. But no, very few bigger developments. We have one now in Tower Oaks that's being proposed. I mean, so it's not that they won't happen. It's just a very limited opportunity.
There's not a lot of open space.
There's not.
In certainly in that kind of the center of Rockville there certainly isn't right. Much open space at all.
So what we're seeing in Tower Oaks, but also in King Farm, are plots of land that were designated to be office buildings have now been turned over to be residences. So we'll see some of that. But you know, single family homes, townhomes don't provide a whole lot of units. They don't provide a large number of units, I should say.
Now, the bus rapid transit has kind of been at a crux of this plan, and certainly there's hope for it. I read that while I think you're hopeful that there will be bus rapid transit, you can't necessarily expect that before you go on with the plan.
I don't want to assume it. I'm a very big proponent of bus rapid transit. I've known about it since the 1980s when I read an article in Scientific American. Where it fits, you know, they work very well. They're a very inexpensive way to have mass transit. However, now this is a retrofit. Right. We don't know how many miles of dedicated lanes. We don't know the cost. We don't know the governance. We don't know how it's funded. We don't even know where it would start and stop along through 55. So until we know those things, it's hard to assume it's going to be there. And I don't need to see it in place. I just need to see that it's committed and a viable option.
So the planning has already started on the bus rapid transit, and it's we've got, I guess, local groups have met and a couple times at least. What, do you know exactly what stage the planning's in right now?
Well, I'm not sure I'd say it's in a planning stage. I think it's more in a research stage,
okay.
Maybe very, very high-level planning, but on something, on a retrofit, on a state highway that is so jammed up to the sidewalks with buildings, you don't really know where the utilities are. You don't really know where you can expand or where you have to constrict. You don't know where the bus is going to mix into the traffic, and at least you don't know the extent of it.
Okay. Champion Projects, what do they say for affordable housing? One of the top goals of the city is to have affordable housing, and there's usually any kind of multifamily development, there's a 15% requirement. What do Champion Projects do with that?
We don't change the percent. It is up to the developer maybe to propose a little bit more moderately priced dwelling units, MPDUs, that's what you're talking about. But you know, for example, if 500 units went up where there were none before, you're moderating housing prices both through the MPDU program, but just you have more housing.
Right.
And I think this area just needs a whole lot more housing.
But I mean, when I see houses go for sale in my neighborhood, if they're not under contract in a week, it's a surprise.
Absolutely.
And people are paying above the asking price frequently. So
right.
I mean, that's the idea. That shows there's some pressure there.
And you're talking 500,000, often 600,000 or more.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And that's a very big price for a new family.
That's a big price for any family.
Really.
Okay. So, so that's the access lanes in the plan. What other decisions has the council made about the plan?
Well, I think we are willing to keep the East Jefferson Street possibility in the plan. I think that'll stay. Mayor and Council decided not to extend Fleet Street. So the you know, that little patch of land between Ritchie Parkway and Mount Vernon Place just won't be built out as a street.
Okay. So East Jefferson, tell us about that a little bit. Why would the city want to build that? What are the obstacles to building that?
Right. East Jefferson would be parallel to Rockville Pike in that area. It would go...
So where does it start? There's an East Jefferson Street already.
Yes,
where does it go and where does it stop?
Okay, so in the southern part of the city, it's parallel to 355, but it stops just north of Congressional Towers.
Okay.
And right there it runs into Woodmont Country Club. Jefferson then starts approximately, where Veers Mill meets 355. But no one's saying that Jefferson is going to go all the way through from the South Pike to where it meets the Veers Mill. But if it goes, say, through what is currently Woodmont Country Club and just west of some of our plazas on 355, that would provide quite a bit of relief for 355.
So part of the idea in the plan is to have roads that are parallel to the pike to take pressure off the pike.
That's right. And so the East Jefferson would be the biggest thing you could possibly do to ease pressure, but also there in the South Pike especially, like there's Chapman Avenue would be extended just west of the tracks. There'd be some cross streets that would provide more of a grid instead of just a line through that area.
Okay. So the on the Champion projects, it's got to be in the South Pike. It's got to be more than 5 acres. Really that only describes one parcel. There is a 17-acre parcel that's been assembled by BF Saul, and they've had a variety of beautiful-looking plans before that they've dangled in front of council members for the last couple of years, and they do look great. How much of the Champion project was designed with them in mind, and have you heard any reaction from them on it?
Yeah, okay, so that's not quite true. There are other 5-acre plots of land even in the South Pike.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hopeful that the idea of a Champion project actually encourages people to merge properties, and I hope that happens. And not only just east of the Pike where BF Saul has something going, but also west of the Pike eventually. It wasn't designed with just that project in mind, BF Saul. I certainly have been in contact with them. I got their opinion on it. We satisfied some of their concerns about Champion projects, but not others. But I think when we enacted in a 5-0 vote this past Monday, it was in the interests of Rockville. We all felt that we had a chance with the Champion project to say to the developer what's in it for Rockville.
All right. What is left for the council to do on the plan?
So this coming Monday, June 13th, we are going to go through a number of text changes, perhaps either typos or rewordings. The plan was written with a point of view that some of us don't particularly like. There's a whole lot of there's an anti-density part in the plan or throughout the plan, and it doesn't say anything about sprawl or pressures on neighborhoods and people jammed together. I think we're just trying to even that out a little bit. Yes, density I think can be a very good thing if it's handled properly. It's a lot better than sprawl.
So you are an avid bicyclist. You bicycle everywhere, and we even see during like the campaigns. You had your campaign signs on there. Do you bike everywhere?
I bike within the city of Rockville. For me, it's really a commuting option. How to get around within Rockville. I very rarely get outside the city on my bike, but it is all year. I've been as low as 10 degrees and as high as 104.
That's awesome. And that helps you. That's great, and that's something you want to see more. I mean, I think actually it's a pretty good city to bike in, although I think I wouldn't bike along Rockville Pike
much.
Yeah,
but the Rockville Pike plan does provide for pedestrian and bicycle options a whole lot better than what we have now. I would not ride on Rockville Pike itself.
Are you pleased with where the Rockville Pike plan is ending up in terms of with bike access?
I am, yes. And I think it's, you can't. It's hard to... bike to a store on Rockville Pike, unless you can approach the store from behind on the west side of Rockville Pike. But you can't, otherwise you just can't. And this will give a way to bike or to walk, make it easier to walk to a store on Rockville Pike.
Okay.
Well, congratulations on being the first guest we've had on the MoCo Beat. We've been talking to Councilman Mark Pershala. Thank you for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much for asking me.
Next up, we're going to talk about the Montgomery County Public Schools calendar. There are some changes afoot, and Dana knows all about.
Absolutely. So one of the reasons I wanted to do this podcast was to help people understand the processes that people go through, whether within the county or within the school system or within the city. And the calendar is definitely a process, and it's something that is very difficult, one of the most challenging things that the board deals with. So Montgomery County Public Schools has 156,000 students. They have 24,000 employees and 201 buildings. So it's not easy to build a calendar that's going to make everybody happy. In fact, it's impossible.
So give us a little context on that. Where does that rank? I mean, that sounds like awfully big numbers, but how big are they compared to other school systems in the country?
MCPS is the 17th biggest school system in the nation. The largest in Maryland by a lot, the fastest growing in Maryland, and certainly one of the fastest growing in the nation.
Okay, thanks.
And the calendar is something that really is a year-round endeavor. So we're just wrapping up the 2015-16 school year. The calendar for next school year, the 16-17 school year, is set. School will start on the 29th, and we will follow a calendar that looks very similar to the one that we had this year. There's always a few things that you have to adjust for. For instance, Election Day. Is the presidential election is going to require schools to close because almost all of the schools are used as polling places, and we anticipate big turnout.
So this coming year, the one that starts this fall, is set, but there are some changes afoot for the following year.
There may be. As happens, there is a calendar committee that works. It's a committee that includes, of course, representatives of the teachers, of the professionals, the administrators, the support professionals that work at MCPS, but also the students, the parents, the religious community. And they meet a few times and they develop a calendar. They kind of hash out some of the issues and they develop a recommended calendar that eventually goes to the board for approval. Now, I want to be clear, it is the board's job to pass the calendar, but this calendar committee's input is important and it is taken very seriously. So, as they will do every year, the policy subcommittee of the board got a presentation on what they're thinking about for the calendar. What's different this year is, so normally MCPS starts the Monday before Labor Day, and then the first weekend is a long weekend with Labor Day, and then the school year continues.
So there's 5 days of school, usually. There's Labor Day, then there's 4 days of school that week, and then they just launch right into it.
And then they launch into it, right. The proposal that the policy committee heard and that the calendar committee endorsed was starting a week earlier. So starting in 2017, starting on August 21st, and then you'd have almost 2 weeks of school before the Labor Day weekend. The one of the changes is that instead of having 5 teacher work days before the school year begins, you'd have 4 teacher work days before the school year begins. You'd have your almost 2 weeks of school, and then Friday, September 1st would be a teacher work day. And there are some benefits to having an earlier calendar. A couple of things that people may not think of. It gives you a little bit more time before AP testing, for instance, or state testing. Those dates for those tests are not set by the county or by the school system. They are set, AP dates are set by the College Board. State testing dates are set by the State Board of Education. So we don't, having a little bit more instruction time before those dates would be beneficial for students. There's also the idea that, you know, you have a few professional days before the school year begins, but then you have a couple of weeks of instruction and you have another professional day where you can address things that have come up, you know, in that first a couple of weeks of school. Is there something that we need to attend to? Those are both really good things and viable reasons. One of the things really driving this has to do with the Eid holiday, which is one of the highest holidays in the Muslim faith. Eid al-Adha, which I'm probably mispronouncing, marks the end of Ramadan. And that date moves around. It's not a steady date. It can be anywhere. This coming year, it's coming September, I believe it's September 12th. And in 2017, it's on September 1st.
So that's a day that the calendar committee has suggested that kids have off.
Right. This has been a debate in Montgomery County. So as for background, you can't just close schools because you want to close for a religious holiday because, you know, you just want to say, well, you know, we have a significant number of Muslims who live in Montgomery County, so we want to close for that reason. You have to have an operational reason. There has to be high absenteeism of staff, for instance.
So, you know, there are a number of religious holidays in the school calendar, but they're kind of in different categories, right? You've got, you know, Christmas and Easter and Easter Monday and Good Friday, Thanksgiving to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. You know, does the county have any discretion on those?
The county doesn't have any discretion on days that have been deemed state public school holidays. So for instance, Good Friday and Easter Monday, the state has basically said schools are closed those days. And if we want to open on those days, we have to get a waiver from the state to do so. Now we did that, I think a couple of years ago, we had to make up a day. So we went to school on Easter Monday.
Because of extra snow.
Of snow days, right? So, and that's certainly a topic for the future. But the state public school holidays, so most of the Christian holidays that they have off, that we have off, are state public school holidays. There are also holidays that the local board, so Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, when they fall on school days, MCPS is closed because that was a decision that the local board made back in the 1970s because teacher absenteeism was something between 15 and 20%. And you couldn't have enough, there weren't enough substitutes out there to have a meaningful day of school. And so for that was an operational reason for closing on those days. The Muslim community in Montgomery County and in the area has been making the case that there are enough Muslim families here that MCPS should be closed on the Eid holidays, which are important holidays in the Muslim faith. There isn't an operational reason per se.
So the thought is that, you know, it's interesting that it wasn't a matter of student absenteeism, you know, for the Jewish holidays. It was teacher absenteeism.
Well, it was both. I mean, they were both around 15% around that time. But certainly an operational reason, you know, if you don't have enough teachers, you can't have school. And there are days where there are high student absenteeism and school goes forward. For instance, take your child to work day. Right. It's probably the day with the highest student absenteeism, except perhaps maybe Monday, June 20th this year, which is the half day, last day of school. I'm assuming there will be a little bit less than 100% attendance.
No one from my household will be going to school that day. It's funny. It's like in some ways, you know, we do have, you know, separation church and state in this country, and it's, we feel pretty firm about that. But we do have Christian holidays written into state law, and then Jewish holidays that there was an operational reason for 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. And you can see why, you know, in our beautiful, diverse Montgomery County community that the Muslim community would say, like, hey, what about us?
Absolutely.
But this hasn't been, the idea is that whether it's numbers of students or numbers of teachers, especially, that those numbers just aren't there.
Right, the absentee rates really aren't significantly higher. When Eid has fallen on a school day, the absentee rate has been around, you know, 5 to 7%, which is what it normally is on a school day.
Do we have any sense of whether Muslim students actually kind of suck it up and go to school that day on one of their major holidays, or are they staying home but they're in such small numbers that they don't really make much of a difference?
I think it's hard to say. You know, I mean, the school system doesn't ask what religion you are.
Right.
Certainly, anecdotally, we heard from the Muslim community that a lot of kids choose to go to school.
Okay.
And you know, that's a difficult decision. We have other people of other religions that have to make these choices too, right? I mean, and there are certainly important religious holidays for Catholic, Christian, Jewish students that they don't have off as well. But there are decisions that have to be made, and we've certainly heard from the Muslim community that a lot of Muslim students choose to go to school. And that is difficult. So to try to kind of, as maybe a compromise, the board chose for this coming school year, the 2016-17 school year, to hold a professional day, a teacher work day, on the Eid holiday.
On the 12th.
On September 12th, right, which is when Eid will be in 2016. And so students won't have to come to school. Teachers, obviously, if they are celebrating a religious holiday, they do get an absent. They can be absent for that. September 1st, 2017 is the Eid holiday that would fall on a school day. And so part of the discussion about the calendar is you start a little bit earlier, you have almost 2 weeks of school, and then you can have that professional day September 1st for all the kind of academic reasons that are good for starting earlier, but also try to recognize the Muslim community and their desire to be off on Eid.
So for the next 2 years, it looks like Eid is covered. It's a professional day, September 12th, this fall, and it's a professional day in 2017.
Tentatively, the board will not pass the final calendar until the fall. They will pass the final calendar. So don't make any plans based around that calendar until it's passed.
But is the thought, is the committee's thought that, you know, the starting week earlier would stick, be a permanent thing, and that Eid would be accommodated with professional holiday each year going forward? Or is there
That's a possibility. I think it wasn't in the committee meetings. I certainly was still at the school system when these conversations began. But it's a possibility that they would do that. But of course, it is counter to the way that some people want to go. Some people want school not to start until after Labor Day.
Right.
And so that certainly is going the other way. But the other side of that is that students would get out earlier, right? We're getting out this year on the 20th. It was supposed to be the 17th without snow days. So they'll get out a week earlier. So, you know, it'll be early. I think the first week of June in 2018 is when school would end. So again, the school calendar can move around, but there's always going to be an issue on one side or the other. I think what's you know, a lesson that I hope people would take from the conversation is that this isn't easy work. And I think the Board of Education and I think the school system want people to be involved. They want people to give their opinions, and there'll be opportunities to do that. But understand that it's not easy, and there's no way that you can make everybody happy. No way. I mean, it's just too difficult. And there are religious holidays that the schools are going to be open, and there are processes for that. Kids get excused absences. They have to be given the opportunity to make up work in a reasonable way, and the school system does that and has worked with the faith community to make sure those rules are understood by everybody. There's a great guide on the MCPS website about how the school system and the religious holiday, how that intersects. And, you know, take a look at that guide. There's a lot of work that went into that, and it's a really good resource.
Okay. Dana, thanks very much for all that detail on the MCPS calendar.
Absolutely. We're ready to move on, and we're ready again. As we mentioned at the last podcast, the World of Beer was opening. So your intrepid podcasters decided to go the day before kind of the official opening. They kind of had a soft opening, and so we visited. And
more out of duty than anything.
I think it was almost obligation for it was for you, the listeners.
So it's a nice place.
It's a really nice place.
They have 50 beers on tap and another 500 bottles and cans. Mm-hmm. It's a big space.
It's a huge space. They have a place for bands to play. I think it's mostly going to be acoustic, kind of 2-3-piece bands. We have some friends who were there on this past Saturday, said it was packed. Of course, it's still new, but you know, I did a little research into World of Beer. They're very careful about where they open. They do the market research, and I think they think the market is there, and the places always get good business, and they do well there. We had some food that was very good. I mean, they were dealing with the first day kind of, and even when we went back a week later, you know, they're still kind of working their way through. But I was really impressed with the place, and proud to say that I am. There's a loyalty program, and you are listening to Loyalty Club members 1 and 2 here.
To be perfectly clear on that, Dana's number one and
absolutely.
I'm number two.
And I'm actually wearing my World of Beer t-shirt right now, which I got as the Loyalty Club. I will take a picture of this and post it to the Moco Beat Twitter account, which is the Moco Beat, at the Moco Beat.
I assure you, though, it's spectacular. The other fun thing is that they have an app, and you can actually check to see which beers are available at your local store. And if you have coughed up the money for your t-shirt, you can track which you know, as you make your way through the menu.
And interestingly, if you drink 500 beers, you get to have a private party and invite people, and you get like $200 worth of beer and $100 worth of food for you and your friends get to have a private party.
You can get a discount on your liver transplant?
Yes, I believe. Also, you'll get to have to find another job probably because I've had 4 and I think by the time I turn 72, I'll be able to get that party. But I'll certainly be inviting our listeners tonight.
All right. So a big welcome to World of Beer. It's a great addition to Rockville Town Center, and yeah, we'll look forward to seeing you guys there.
Absolutely. And that whole development is really starting to come alive now, you know, with the Panera, there's the Supercuts, I think, one of the Supercuts place, and there's a bank.
Old Line Bank.
Yep. So it's a nice development, and having it right there, it's just kind of where the town center is growing a little bit that way.
And actually, man, not everybody might know this. There's, you know, where that building is, it's directly across the street from the Regal Theaters. There's used to be all parking lot, you know, two halves of a parking lot there. Now it's just half a parking lot. And the plan is, not this year, not next year, but, you know, going forward, there will be another very similar building built there, similar to the one that just came up that the World of Beer is housed in. And what these buildings have, and it's difficult to see this by looking at it, but what they are basically, you know, a lot of hotel, a lot of housing up top, but the first couple floors are basically fairly thin areas that wrap around parking garages. Mm-hmm. So they go, there's a lot of parking downstairs, there's a fair amount of parking upstairs. And when that second building goes up, it'll take away that the rest of that parking right there, but there'll be hundreds of parking spaces within that building. Mm-hmm. But that's probably 5 or 10 years out. I think the idea was that the revenues from this first building would actually help guarantee the loans that would take to build that second building.
Excellent. Well, so we hope to see you over at World of Beer and to all of the places that are opening up in the center. It's really booming right now, so that's great.
Yeah. Our last topic for this second edition of our podcast is to correct the mistakes of the first edition of our podcast.
Absolutely.
We didn't receive any corrections for our listeners, although we're still expecting many. but we do have one.
Yes, I have to admit that when we were talking about the year 1989, which I think was the last time that they updated the plan, the master plan for the Rockville Pike, and I said I had just graduated from high school, but unfortunately that's not true. I had just graduated from college, so I made myself 4 years younger than I was, so that was a mistake, and I apologize to our listeners for I am older.
Thank you, old man. All right. thanks for joining us. This wraps up the second edition of the MoCo Beat. We will see you in a week or two.
All right. Thank you for listening.